Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined. This is Landry Football on Radio Influence. The only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Well, everybody, it is game week. Sort of, anyway. Yes, we've got games this weekend, so the countdown is on. And not big games, but it's a little bit, as they call it, week zero. A little bit to whet the appetite a little bit. May not be a great appetizer, but again, it'll get us started. And folks, we're on now. We're ready in the football season mode. We're really excited about today's show and going forward. It is always fun in the business season of college football and the NFL. As you don't have this time of year, you don't have football season unless you have that quote-unquote business season, personnel season, where you change your personnel, improve your personnel for next season. This is what it's all about. This is what we do it for. So it's exciting time of year, though. People ask me all the time, what's your favorite time of the year? People think the draft is my favorite time of year. It's not. Football season is the favorite time of year. We do this as a coach and as a scout. We do it for the same reasons. We love the game and we love the competition. So can't wait for the games to get underway. And just got so much to speak with today. Folks, I'm not going to even tell you what we're going to talk about a number of things, but I'm not going to even get into it. We're going to get to as much as possible, work through it, and then whatever we can't get to, I'm going to kind of go in priority. And then whatever we can't get to, we'll pick it up. But one thing I want to remind you about, a couple of things really that are important as we're into the football season, folks. We here at LandryFootball.com want you to join us this football season. Get in on all the inside information and analysis on the college and pro game, from film room breakdowns to all the latest information, recruiting, draft, coaching news, what's going on during the course of the season, all this, much, much more. Each Tuesday and Thursday, as you're listening to this right now, you got the Landry Football Podcast, which is a combination of everything football. We answer your questions. We do a lot of things. We've got a number of questions to get to today. College football, NFL, you name it. We cover everything. Starting tonight, we tape for late night, early tomorrow morning, Wednesday. You're going to catch a new podcast called Rush the Field with myself and Scott Seidenberg from NBC Sports. Done radio with Scott for a while. Excited to be doing this college football podcast. We're going to be doing it starting tonight. We're going to be doing it every week, all year long. Yes, we're excited about the fact that it coincides with the start of the season. We will break down the games, review the games, tell you what's going on around college football, giving you a coaching and scouting perspective of the game of football, the college level. All the news and notes and information and off-the-field stuff, we'll cover that as well. We're going to have a lot of fun, obviously, focusing on the season as the season is taking place. We're going to do it and get it up late Tuesday night. The great folks at Radio Influence are producing this podcast as well. They're going to get it up late Tuesday night, early Wednesday morning for you. We pick that day for you. It's midweek. It gives me time to get through the tape and review the games and start to look ahead to the next week's games. But it also coincides with Tuesday nights when the rankings start to come out, when the committee starts to get together, then that's when it's done. So when those come out, we'll have that for you and react to it, you know, in a very, very quick fashion. So look for that. Starting late tonight, early tomorrow morning, Rush the Field podcast. There must listens along with the Landry Football podcast. So check out LandryFootball.com today. Got our best season membership package ever. Folks, for less than a magazine subscription, you can have access to the insights of a veteran coach and scout. Tell them that you heard us here on the Landry Football Podcast, and you get the best membership package available. Also, if you want us to help promote your business, contact us at LandryFootball.com. You see the Contact Chris link on LandryFootball.com. We'll get back to you. Let us help you grow your brand right here at LandryFootball.com. All right. You know, the football season at LandryFootball.com, much like this podcast and the Rush to Field podcast, going to take on kind of a different tone to it. For those of you who are new, this is what we do during the season. First of all, we have the daily notebooks, college football, NFL. We may even expand that to morning and afternoon for both because the news are so plentiful in both. That will depend upon the amount of news that are going on that day. Lots going on now. For example, we're telling you what's going on around college practices. We've got some quarterback decisions as expected. Shea Patterson gets the job at Michigan. Sam Ellinger gets the job at Texas. We're gonna keep you up to date on that information and a lot of other details. Recruiting that goes on all year long. A lot of good information there in the college notebooks. NFL notebooks, same thing. Injuries are a big part of both, unfortunately. We'll tell you what's going on there. Who's playing well? We're going to give you a lot of what's going on news-wise, but also what's going on behind the scenes that's not making your news, but that is inside information that you can only get here. We provide that for you. So our notebooks are big. Then our game previews are big. College game program, all the NFL games. And we will have so many college games, for example, the first week, week one, that we're going to preview that I can't even list them. It would take too long. So a lot of good things, insights into the game, these teams, like you've never had before. So as I said before, it is the best value on the market to get your access to a coaching and scouting department for less than a magazine subscription. It's the best deal going. Okay. Latest on the Ohio State situation, we're not going to spend a lot of time on it, but the latest is, obviously, the committee has rendered their findings. They have verbally met with the board, 19-member board at Ohio State, and have given them kind of some information in which they are spending time today absorbing. They will meet tomorrow, the board will, at 9 o'clock local time, Columbus. And we'll have, by law, they have to do this. They'll have an open session, which will be very, very brief, and then they'll go in chambers and render a decision. It's already been floated out there, a suspension for Urban Meyer. That's going to be, it'll be interesting to see how they word it. It'll be interesting to see how they go forward with it. But what it really is going to come down to, I think, is they're going to admit maybe certain flaws on how they've handled things, could have done things better. This was, you know, quote-unquote eye-opening, whatever, however they're going to phrase it. They're going to do their best to make Urban Meyer look as clean as they can with this. The public stain is embarrassing. He clearly enabled Zach Smith on his staff for a long time. And there are more situations that have come out, will likely come out, as things that were very unsavory that happened. This coincides with what I told you here about assistants on the Ohio State staff that were not happy with Zach Smith being on the staff. They didn't like him. They thought that there were different set of rules for them and him. And that's really come to light. So as we go forward with this, I don't know how they'll couch it. It'll be interesting. But the general feeling is that Urban will survive. Now, will it be a suspension? I think that there is something to the effect I've been told that, yeah, it's sort of a let's leak this out there. And I don't, if there's not much blowback from the leaking out of, hey, he'll get a suspension, I think they may call it a suspension with time served. Meaning he's been out since August 1st, I believe is the date, in which he's been not paid. So I think that may be the time served suspension, and they would just leave it at that. If there is some internal criticism or external criticism of that decision, then they may go as far as 2-game suspension, start of the season. Don't see it more than that. Would be surprised if it's more than that. So look for that to come out down the pike really soon. Some other news around college football. I mentioned that Texas and Michigan have settled in on their quarterback choices. Listen, Shea Patterson is the best arm talent they have, passing skill talent that they have at Michigan. No doubt about that. The issue is going to be, can he run this offense? Or more importantly, can Michigan modify what they do offensively to fit Shea Patterson? He is a spread guy, not a pro-style dropback guy. I know that just for some people, they don't quite get the intricacies of that. Doesn't matter to him. He can throw it, he can throw it. It does matter. It makes a huge difference. And I think his success, or lack thereof, is going to be directly tied to how they play it, how they utilize him. Do they tailor some offense to him? How does it work, the dropback fit to it? So that's going to be key there. I think the Texas situation and Sam Ellinger, to me, was not a surprise, but it's going to bear watching and see how this plays out during the course of the year and how this Texas offense develops. Staying at Texas, Caden Stearns is going to start at safety in the season opener against Maryland. By the way, we should have something definitive on Maryland's situation very quickly as well, as they open up against the aforementioned Texas, likely without DJ Durkin, but we'll see. Staying in Michigan, Casey Hughes is going to play corner, nickel, special teams for him. Good-looking players. The transfer from Utah, if you remember, this winter, they initially put him with the safeties, but he's going to be a really valuable guy. I know Mike Zordich, they need, as you need in college, at least 5 corners. And in the NFL, you need 6. College, you need 5, and I think that he can be one of those 5. Indiana, I know that they are really liking the play of Nick Linder at center. Can play center and guard for him. I've got some news in my notebook from yesterday about some players that have really stood out and have done a good job, you know, in early fall practice and who might have an impact. So time permits me from going through a lot of it, but you can check it out through there. At Michigan, some other news, the sophomore Tarik Black, you know, he started the season on a roll but had the fractured foot. He's going to be a good red zone target, and he shows the ability to make big plays. People, I heard somebody say the other day that Michigan, they don't have any targets at receiver. Obviously, don't know Michigan, don't follow Big Ten, don't follow Michigan very well. Michigan's got 2 really good young receivers in Black and Donovan Peoples-Jones. 2 guys that I thought were outstanding last year that could only potentially be better. Really, really good. Some latest recruiting information we've got. Minnesota's made their decision at quarterback as well. Zach Anastad, freshman, named a starting quarterback, is a true freshman. He was battling the redshirt freshman, Tanner Morgan. So we're dealing with inexperience and youth here, either direction they were going to go. I expect both to play. The 6'3", 215-pound was really impressive in practice. They opened the season against New Mexico State on August 30th. Wake Forest, their redshirt sophomore quarterback, Jamie Newman, was held out of practice. I am thinking, too, also, at Wisconsin, Taiwan Deal is running second team behind Jonathan Taylor at running back. Really good player. Really important. This is a really good team. At Virginia Tech, they've moved DeJuan Ellis from quarterback to wide receiver, a dual-threat quarterback coming out of high school, 4-star kid. He has a real chance to be a playmaker in camp. Also, one of the guys that I mentioned in early camp is the little mighty mite from Auburn, a freshman running back, Sean Rivers, really stood out. He's not going to play in that offense as a 3-down back, but, boy, he can make players miss. And, you know, Cam Martin's going to be the guy, but remember that name, Sean Rivers, is somebody could have an impact on this year's team. Some college football games that we're going to be breaking down, some big ones. We got a ton of, as I mentioned, too many to mention all of them, but Certainly, we're going to get down deep into Auburn, Washington, and Michigan, Notre Dame, and LSU, Miami, Virginia Tech, Florida State, Alabama, Louisville, Tennessee, West Virginia, Maryland, Texas, Florida Atlantic, Oklahoma, Oregon State, Ohio State, San Diego State, Stanford, very underrated game. The great annual opening Colorado State game, but there's some others, folks. Northwestern, Purdue, Wake Forest, Tulane, Ole Miss, Texas Tech, North Carolina, Cal, Northern Illinois, don't sleep on the Huskies, Iowa. They get them, Boise, Troy, Cincinnati, UCLA, Middle Tennessee, Vandy, BYU, Arizona, Navy, Hawaii. Some really good matchups that we're going to get into. We're going to talk a little bit on, we're going to have a little bit of information, breakdowns of Colorado State, Hawaii, and Wyoming, and New Mexico State as they play this weekend. The game breakdowns, are we'll kind of do them individually since there's so few games going forward. But we're going to obviously get deep into all the game breakdowns week in and week out. We'll have them for you starting Wednesday, more like Thursday, because we'll spend the early part of the week breaking down what happened the week before. Want to switch over to the NFL a little bit and talk about some things that are jumping out to me on tape. And I've got the full week two standouts in up on the website in preseason. Folks, here's what I look at individually. I look at guys that who are making plays that could have impact. People don't really know how to evaluate preseason games. A lot of people without a football background can't evaluate the regular season that well either, but at least the results are important. It's tougher in preseason because the results don't matter in terms of who wins and loses. But what is really important is how you look at players and who is making plays and who could have impacts. Those things are really, really important. And I think that some guys that have jumped out at me, probably no one more so than James Washington, the receiver out of Pittsburgh, the Steelers, doing a great job. James from Oklahoma State is going to have an impact on this team. This is going to be fun to watch. They're going to double team Antonio Brown, and this guy is going to make plays. He's going to win a lot of one-on-one matchups. The little running back Carson out of Seattle is really good. I've got a question about him. Anthony Miller, another receiver with the Bears. Duke Elijah Ford, good defensive lineman with the Texans. Deron Payne of the Redskins. Just some guys that I think really off to a good start. Very interested to watch the development, if we see much of it this year, of Cam Robinson at left tackle with the Jags. Really struggled last year. He was manhandled during Saturday's second preseason game against the Vikings. So a little bit concerned about where his future is and how quickly they can get him up to speed. It's looking more and more to me like Khalil Mack is going to be traded from the Raiders. The difficulty, or at least that is the intent of the Raiders, the difficulty of getting a deal like this done. Everybody loves to do this, right in this fantasy football world. They love to trade this guy, and this is how it's going to happen. This is where he'd be great for the Packers. He'd be great for this team. Do it. You know, you hear all these guys, these analysts say, you do it. They don't understand how to build teams. Everybody would love to add Khalil Mack to their roster. The problem is you've got to make the deal. You've got to give up at least a first-round pick to the Raiders, if not more. They're going to want a 1 and a 3. Somebody be willing to do that. They might even do it. Raiders might do it for 1 and a 4. But that's only one part of it. The second part is you're going to have to pay Khalil Mack quarterback money. So you can't just do a deal and figure out how to pay him. You have to do this in advance. You have to do this with the idea that my quarterback is making $22 million a year. He's going to now be making $22. You're going to have $45 million, $50 million tied up in two players. It is not easy to do that. And so you can't bring a guy, if you're Green Bay and you bring him in, you just now cost yourself whatever you're going to pay him. Now you're going to have to pay Aaron Rodgers even more because he's more valuable than Khalil Mack. So now you're in a big issue. How you just don't do that. Well, we just pay this guy less. That doesn't work that way. It's complex. I don't know if a deal will get done, but I know that there is impetus to get one done. Adrian Peterson headed to Washington. I don't know. This is going to be interesting to see if he's got a guaranteed deal, if he makes the roster. If he doesn't make the roster, then he's done. Rotation is not really what he's good at. He's a guy that's an impact carry back that I don't know if he can carry it for the long haul like he used to. And he's certainly not a non-factor in the passing game. People have asked me, are you surprised that Dez Bryant hasn't signed yet? No. If you've listened to this, you know that I'm not surprised. Why should anyone be surprised? Dez Bryant has a view of himself as an elite receiver, which he's no longer is. He's no longer an elite receiver, no longer an elite player. He sees himself as that. Folks, it's not about whether he doesn't have value. Well, he's worth something. He should be on a team. And yes, he should. He doesn't see himself that way. He sees himself as the elite receiver that wants to get paid, the top receiver type money. No one's interested in him at that price. Many are interested in him at a far less price. Therein lies the problem. Therein lies why I am not surprised. I am fully aware of what he thinks of himself and what teams in the league think of him. And there is a Grand Canyon size difference between the two. So as that the numbers come together, it's going to be interesting to see where is a fit. I didn't see the fit in Cleveland. A, he's going to want to break the bank. That makes sense for Cleveland to do that. What is Dez Bryant? In my opinion, he's an inside slot that can body up, get open. He doesn't run well enough to be an outside vertical receiver, but he's big enough to be an inside slot. They got one of those that they paid a lot of money to in Jarvis Landry. You're going to get the same thing, and you're going to get a guy that is the alpha male, two alpha males, both are the guy. Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't work. And you're going to put a potential toxic locker room guy into a young locker room, it makes no sense for Cleveland. No way, shape, or form does it make sense. Wanted to address the helmet rule and its effect thus far on preseason and what we've seen thus far in preseason. What do you hear? Oh, my God. I don't know what they're doing. What are we going to do? You know, this is I don't understand it. Folks, I don't disagree with any of that. A couple of things to keep in mind. They always, because they emphasize it, are going to throw flags more in preseason than the regular season. Okay, because they're trying to establish a behavior pattern. I've said this before. I'll say it again. They're trying to change the way guys go about tackling, which for years and years has gone very, very lax on how you tackle. Poor tackling has infiltrated football for a while now. Lowering of the head, poor tackling technique. You lose sight of the player. You miss the player. You go for the kill shot, and you miss instead of tackling well. It is the result of when TV became really popular in football a long time ago, 20, 25 years ago, and even greater as the more modern days increase the popularity of highlight shows and whatnot. Tackling's got worse, coinciding with the fact that we don't tackle well. We don't tackle enough. We don't work on tackling enough. You get poor tackling. So what has happened is a lot of injuries that coincides with players in modern eras that have dealt with CTE, and we've seen tests that have shown indicators what football can cause. All that's contributed to a panic of, we better make sure that we do a good job to make the sport as safe as we can so that when we are litigated against, we can say we've done A, B, C, X, Y, Z to make the game safer. Okay? That's where we are. Here's how I look at it. And this is something that's been done for a while. Let me give you an example. We don't call pass interference very consistently or well. That's a problem, too. This one is becoming more egregious because it could throw players out of the games and whatnot. Here's what you have to do, and this is something that has been done for a while, and that is you've got to study how each crew officiates games. And I think there's going to be an extra study of officials, and I've been a part of the doing this, to where you take a crew, Terry McAuliffe's crew, whatever the case may be, and say, this is what they like to call. Percentage-wise, they call more holding than other people, and here's what they consider holding. Here's what they interpret as holding. Here's what you can get away with. Here's what you can't. There's going to be an extra study of how each official plans on calling the lowering the head rule. There's no such thing as a unified calling of the helmet rule. There's no such thing. I mean, there is, but how it's interpreted is going to be very individualistic. So there's going to be intense study by teams on these people, on these crews, and you're going to make a determination of what you can do and what you can't do. It's just the same thing we do with pass interference or holding or anything else, but it's going to be more so. The other thing I'm noticing on top of the helmet rule in preseason is they're taking away the pick plays down the field in preseason. They don't want linemen downfield, and they're calling it. So it's really having to affect, having a great effect on the screen game. The key is to educate your team on what officiating crews are calling and how they are interpreted. Once you know the rules, the job is to adjust. And so here's what I would say about the helmet rule. We're going to see the well-coached teams versus the not-so-well-coached teams. This is what's going to have an effect on the helmet rule. It's not going to be just whimsical-natured, we don't know what's going to happen. You're not going to know within relatively short order what crews are going to call what. And you're going to adjust to it, or you're not. And if you don't, you're going to be one of those teams that are not well-prepared or well-coached. You're going to struggle with it. It's all about preparation, and I think that's going to be the key. All you have to do, all we ask for is consistency, is if you know a crew is going to call things a certain way during the course of a game, if you're teaching things one way because this is how they're going to call it, and you change how you call it, then that's bad. That is unacceptable at that point. Once you know the rules, it's your job. It's my job as a coach to adjust it. Like any rule, on or off the field, if you know the rule and understand it, you take advantage of it. Bill Walsh, when he was running the West Coast offense, he knew every umpire and where they stood. Umpire stands just behind the line of scrimmage into where the linebacker positions are. He ran his routes that week according to the position of where that umpire stood every week. He used the umpire as a pick guy. And people, you basically used the umpire to run the pick play. I mean, he screened it. He walled defenders off. He took the receiver, ran him right up against that umpire, and the defensive player is trying to run over through around the umpire. That's just knowing the rules and making the adjustment. He also studied where the guy would drop to and would run the route to that guy's drop point. That's what it's all about. So what I'm telling you is we've got to understand the rules. We've got to understand how they're going to call it, and then we've got to adjust to it. So that's my overview of it. Folks, it's not going away. They're not going to, well, you know what? People are complaining. We're going to go ahead and go back to the way we've been doing it. It's not happening. So if you don't like it, I don't know, do something else. Take up hunting and fishing or whatever and enjoy your fall doing something else, because it is not changes. It is not changing at all. All right, some more news. I actually think, well, it's not good news. I think the Bills are going to be better off getting Josh Allen ready to go. I think that this is a team that, despite the fact that they made the playoffs last year, Buffalo, they weren't a playoff team. And I think they need to play younger kids in September and get them ready in November. I think you can build an offense around Josh Allen. He's not going to be able to run it right away, but you can build an offense around him. You can't build an offense around A.J. McCarron. He's not good enough. I'm excited to see what Kansas City is going to do with Patrick Mahomes. I'm excited to see what Andy Reid's going to do. I mean, it's going to be a lot of play action. They're going to run a lot of pre-snap motion to help identify the coverages to make it easier for the quarterback. I'm very curious to see what adjustment Sean McVay is going to make as a play caller this year. Rams were so well scouted this offseason. I know, did a lot of work, you know, for my NFL teams, doing a lot of research on how Sean McVay uses personnel groupings, and calls plays. He's going to have to adjust because people are going to be prepared. So his ability to adjust off the adjustments are going to be key, which, by the way, is the key to being a good play caller. You don't attack coverages and fronts as a play caller. You attack the adjustments to the fronts and coverages because you've got to anticipate what they're going to do to counteract what you're going to do. Very curious to see how some young quarterbacks come along. Jimmy Garoppolo just continues to look like the real deal. Deshaun Watson's going to be fun. Sam Darnold is the real deal. Josh Rosen's going to have a really good career, I believe. Those are some real positives for the league right now. I don't know. The Cleveland situation is a lot murkier. These quarterbacks that are good, that are mobile, that are poised, that make good decisions under pressure, they're going to be tough to defend. You know, the way you attack quarterbacks from a defensive standpoint is not with coverage. It's with pressure, rush pressure. And it's tough to rush these young quarterbacks who are athletic as they are. They can escape and make plays. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Going to be interesting to see what they do in Chicago with Mitch Trubisky. They're going to have to utilize his athleticism. Matt Nagy not going to be able to run the Alex Smith offense. They're going to have to utilize the play action, get him moving. It's going to be interesting, a lot of fun. So those are some things that are jumping out to me in the early part of, as we're 2 weeks into preseason. Week three, we'll get into a little bit on Thursday, but week three is a little bit more of a dress rehearsal. So we'll get a little bit of a feel for some teams maybe playing not almost a half in some cases. So, listen, it is still not, you know, the complete indicator, but it gives you a little bit better feel for who's what and who's capable, more capable than maybe what we've seen thus to this point. You got to get guys ready to play during the season, which leads right into finishing up this podcast, answering a few questions. Jacob asked, do you read anything into the teams who choose to play their starting quarterbacks in game two of the preseason as opposed to don't? Yeah, it's different for each team, Jacob. It depends upon who needs work, who's coming off injuries, who's not getting as many reps in practice, who needs more game time issues, who maybe is a little bit sore. It is nothing to read strongly into, but it is very, very situational. And you ask, assuming both are healthy, which Seahawk running back do you prefer, Penny or Carson? I like the way Carson has run. Penny's got a little bit more versatility. I like them both. I don't know that I prefer any at this point. Penny a little bit more overall, but Carson maybe been a little bit tad better in the preseason or the practices leading up to preseason. Kevin asks, from the time you started evaluating the NFL up until now, have you modified your definition of what constitutes an open receiver and which throws are considered acceptable? Kevin, first of all, you didn't ask this, but things have changed over time. First of all, for example, throwing windows are a lot narrower in the NFL than they are in college. That's not what you're asking. You're talking about NFL. But there's a difference because a lot of what some of the spread concepts will create a little bit more spacing in coverage. So guys can be a little less accurate if you can scheme things up correctly. You can complete passes without being overly accurate. So guys getting open can be modified a couple of different ways based upon scheme and then their ability to stem their routes and get separation. So, yes, you do modify it based upon those elements. Accuracy is still key. You've got to put the ball on time to spots. And if you don't do that well, you're going to have some trouble. You just are. So what you've got to do is you've got to study where's the ball need to be. The big thing now is you can throw a guy open. Well, you can throw him open, which means you lead him to an open spot. The receiver because he's making side adjustments. He's running. The quarterback with a different view of the coverage will throw the ball to an open spot. It's a job for the receiver to adjust to it and go catch it. But you still have to throw it accurately to that open spot, not lead him too far and not too far behind it. But absolutely, you adjust based upon scheme, based upon situation, and I think based upon what we've seen now is coaches. Sean McVay, Doug Peterson, guys that are incorporating some element of the college game, and those are not the only two. A lot of people are. Andy Reid basically put the college version of the West Coast offense, taking some of the Utah concepts that Alex Smith had and putting it in the NFL. So a lot of that is infiltrated the pro game for with certain elements of it for some time. Matt asks, can you analyze head coach Paul Johnson and his staff at Georgia Tech? Considering his unique offense, how effective does Georgia Tech run it? Georgia Tech runs their offense very well. They run it to a T. Is it an offense that is very versatile? No, it is not. They surprisingly get big plays out of the passing game more than most because they normally have gotten big-time receivers that can make plays, and they get them in one-on-one coverage because you have to play nine guys in the box most of the time. Yes, what's the ceiling of the program? Listen, people will point to the fact of, well, Georgia Tech won a share of a national title. That's an anomaly. That's not something that can happen on a regular basis. I think they can be competitive in the ACC and go to bowl games, and in the right year, in the right scenario, you've heard me describe things like that before. Who knows? They can compete, get in to an ACC championship game once in a while, but not on a regular basis. They've got limitations. Matt, you ask about the head coach and his staff at Syracuse. I answered that question last week. And so if you didn't hear about it, there are a lot of the players in New York. There's not a hotbed of talent in New York. A lot of them have gone to other places. Penn State's always had good success there. Syracuse has history, but it's old history. I think recruiting facilities have been adequate at best. Their commitment in terms of paying coaches have been adequate at best. I think right now they've got a coach that's a little fire and brimstone in Dino Babers, not as consistent. I think that the program has going to lose some of its luster going and has lost some of its luster going into the ACC, and that I think that they're near rock bottom of the ACC. The Big East, there weren't as many schools. I think Syracuse was competitive with a Rutgers, for example, and maybe in a given time frame could be better. I don't see Syracuse getting into the mid to upper mid portion of the ACC anytime soon. You ask about Virginia Tech's coaching staff. I've actually addressed this as well with Justin Fuente. Justin is a really bright play caller. The famous defensive coordinator that you refer to, that's Bud Foster. Frank Beamer did a great job. It's been a good program. They've got to do a better job recruiting in the Beltway. You know, and you've asked about their tradition versus Virginia's. Well, Virginia doesn't have much of a football tradition. Virginia has some academic qualifications that makes it a little more difficult. One, two, their facilities and commitment to football hadn't been what Virginia Tech has been under Beamer. Beamer got that program facility-wise and stadium-wise. It's one of the more underrated places to play a game in Blacksburg. So it's got a better football program, much better, because they've emphasized it. They put emphasis in it more so than Virginia has. Richard asks about what was your assessment of Charlie Casserly and Phil Savage as general managers? Well, Charlie was more of a paper pusher for Bobby Bethard. Charlie was an assistant GM, the Redskins, for Bobby. Charlie's not a very good evaluator. He really struggled as a GM of the Redskins. That whole organization slipped quite a bit under him, even though they had an incredible budget. He wasn't very successful in Houston either. You know, I think he's an organizer guy that just doesn't have a real good, keen eye for talent. Phil Savage, I've known both of these guys very well. Work with Phil. Phil's a good guy. He's a bit of a politician. He's not a great evaluator, but he does a good job of kind of selling himself. And You know, he wasn't successful in Cleveland. That's why he's not gotten another chance. You know, I think that, you know, he lived a lot on the success of Ozzie Newsome in Baltimore. And again, politically, he's always was connected and got an opportunity in Cleveland and just didn't work. He's not had opportunities to work in the league. I know that he and Charlie both have tried to do some things consulting-wise like I do. They've not had much success. I know Phil now has gone into work in that American Alliance League as he's not able to land a job in the NFL. But both are good guys, not great evaluators, and I think their record kind of speaks for itself. What was the best way, in your view, to how to deal with Brett Favre and the Packers? Gosh, it's going back a long way, Richard, but I think the way they dealt with it was probably correct in most cases. They drafted a young quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. He wanted to move on with Brett. Brett was an icon. Brett had a huge ego. Probably should have communicated to him more, let him know a little bit more so that it wasn't a surprise and it didn't come contentious. But a lot of what they did made a whole lot of sense. The move to Aaron Rodgers was a godsend, and Aaron Rodgers has been even more successful than Brett Favre in terms of his ability to make plays in this league, and certainly more consistent and more grounded and less mistake-prone than Brett. So hope that answers your question. Folks, that'll wrap it up for today. Thursday, we'll be back more, kind of look at a little bit closer towards the start of the season. We'll be getting into the third preseason action, getting into week zero of college football, updating you on the latest. Maybe we'll have a definitive decision at Ohio State and Maryland by that point. A lot of things to react to. Reminder that if you've got a question, send it to us at LandryFootball.com. Hit contact Chris, send me a question, and I'll address it right here. Remind you that you want to get involved with LandryFootball.com as a member as football season is here. It is just a great opportunity. We've given you the best discount we could in the off season. We've given you the best discount we can during the season. So all you got to do is look at we've got it up on the website now. Join today. Just click on that and find out the different offers. You can try it for a month, for 3 months, 6 months, a year, 9 months, a year. You got every opportunity to do it. And we do it that way because, hey, you want to try it for a month? That's great. 3 months, try it that way. 6 months, 9 months, you want to get through the season, you're not worried about the offseason. Hey, it's your choice. The best deal we have, obviously, is to do it for 12 months. But great opportunity to see what we provide for you. Not like the stuff you get anywhere else because they don't have our football background and coaching and scouting. So we take you into a place where others cannot. So check it out. We appreciate you joining us, and we will join you Thursday for another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence. This is a Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Ladies and gentlemen, guess what I got for you today? Tammy Aaron on Duffified Live.
I'm fortunate that I was first the middle child and second the only girl, so I was the princess. I could really do no wrong. I was very pampered and spoiled growing up. And then if you add in all the luxury for my movie career, I have lived a very, you know, a very fortunate life. I had a ton of work to do, by the way, because I was working, you know, up until I was 18, I was working constantly like 6 and 7 days a week. Right. So there was a lot of work that went into it, but I was, you know, I was building this career that I had wanted since I was 5. That's how young I was when I started saying, I want to be a movie star. And my parents thought I was so cute. And they're like, of course you want to be a movie star, Tammy. Sure. Everyone wants to be a movie star. And then when I won the role of Pippi Longstocking out of over 8,000 girls worldwide, then my parents were like, wait a minute, she did it. How did she know? But that was amazing. Once I got the role, 10 minutes later, the USA Today was in my hotel room suite taking my picture for the cover of the Life section. that ran the following day. And then I did the big press thing. So I've been doing personal interviews since I was 11. And I'm fortunate my career has lasted this long. Like, it's incredible to me. I'm so lucky because not many people can stay in the industry, you know, for decades. Yeah, for decades.
Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com.